It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's here. Mary Jo Foley is here. There's a brand new version of Outlook. Finally, Project Monarch is available officially. We'll tell you what you can do to test it out now and what you can expect from it. Microsoft Teams is now in the Windows Store, and that's where Quick Assist has hidden, in case you've been looking for it. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 777, recorded Wednesday, May 18th, 2022. Halo Infinitus. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by Collide. Get endpoint management that puts the user first. Visit collide.com/ww to learn more and activate a free 14-day trial today. No credit card required. And by Acronis. Keep your digital world safe from all threats with the only cyber protection solution that delivers a unique integration of data protection and cybersecurity in one. Acronis Cyber Protect Home Office, formerly Acronis True Image. Go to go.acronis.com/ww. And by Trade Coffee. Right now, Trade is offering new subscribers a total of $30 off your first order, plus free shipping, when you go to drinktrade.com/windows. That's more than 40 cups of coffee for free. Get started by taking their quiz and let Trade find a coffee you'll love. It's time. Get ready, dozers. Windows Weekly's on the air. All the way from Mexico City, where he's burying his face in his hands at this point. The sun is shining bright on Mr. Paul Thurrott, Thurrott.com, leanpub.com. Yeah. Looking good in his brand new apartment.
Don't mind the bed.
I thought that was soundproofing. I thought you had it. No,
it's to block the light. There's, I don't know, 15 or 12 feet of just light.
Glass.
It's nice. Inescapable.
It's nice. Yeah. So nice. Mm. Also here, Mary Jo Foley, all about Microsoft.com. And that's a ZDNet blog. It's great to have both of you for our Stephen Sanofsky Memories episode. No,
that's later in the year, not now.
So you actually, this surprised me, because Paul was looking at an old episode where you guys talked about Sanofsky
for
an hour and a half.
Well, because remember, I'm writing that series, and that's where I'm at. Mm-hmm. I'm at the doing aftermath of him leaving.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then Mary Jo actually knows the date he was fired. So we're going to celebrate.
I'm not bitter, guys.
In November.
I'm not bitter.
We're going to celebrate.
November 12th.
Whatever the Wednesday is right after 11/12.
Oh, we should do the 10th anniversary.
That was a Monday. I'm sorry.
We'll do the 10th anniversary.
So that was a Monday, which I know because I was driving to basketball, and you called me, and I was in my car, and I literally almost crashed the car because she was screaming, and I thought something was wrong. And she was. Mary Jo is usually not very yelly.
I couldn't even talk to you. I just remember I was like talking in gasps, and you were like, "Slow down! I can't understand what you're saying."
Wow, this was a very traumatic time.
It was very traumatic.
Yeah, I mean, you remember this like one remembers a traumatic event.
I don't know if you guys remember. I do, but I think Paul does. I was blacklisted while he was on his job, and so when the dark cloud lifted, I got my access back to the Windows.
I don't mean to just go on and on about this, but the one thing I was talking to my wife about this today, because I'm obsessed by this now. I was up and down with Stephen Sanofsky. Sometimes I was his best friend, and sometimes he literally directed PR to have nothing to do with me. He actively worked to make my career less. And all these years later, I've gone back through everything that I've written. I've gone back through the entire history. I've done it. It's over. There's no more to say about it. I can't find a thing where I might have made him upset. Like, I don't actually understand his problem with me. I think he was surrounded by yes men, and I suppose I might have at one point said, maybe this thing needs some training in it for normal people because they're not going to find the UIs. And that was not the message he wanted. I really don't know what the catalyst was, because I look at what I wrote, and if anything, I was overly positive about it. I don't know why.
Huh.
So I don't even know why. And I know with Mary Jo, I'm sure it was too truthy,
Yeah.
You just, he doesn't, you know, right?
They said to me, he doesn't value the function of what you think is news. I'm like, that's nice. Right. That's my job.
Doesn't matter what he might say thinks.
Objectively is news.
Right. I don't understand.
Well, that was
the
his thing.
Executive.
He wanted to control the messaging.
Yeah,
sorry.
I don't understand that.
Yeah.
I'm reading the new book After Steve, the Trip Mickle book. I'm going to interview Trip tomorrow at 1:30 Pacific.
Fun.
Yeah. On,
great book.
On the network. It is. It's really fun. And their work personalities at Apple kind of like Sinofsky.
Oh, yes.
Scott Forstall,
God, yes.
For one. And I think
absolutely.
There was a similar celebration inside.
By the way,
when Scott was.
Weird that you said that, because Scott Forstall was let go from Apple just before this. It was the same year.
Yeah.
And we talked about that on the podcast. A very similar personality.
Yep.
Megalomaniac. Mm-hmm. Assumed he was going to be the next CEO.
Yeah, was sure of it. Yeah.
Yep. Positive.
It's not a surprise, but there is a lot of politics at Apple, and I would guess the same thing at any big company. Yeah.
By the way, here's a fun little, it's not a factoid, it's a real truth, that's in this book that I just heard, which was Johnny Ives met with, J.J. Abrams, who did the new Star Wars movies. And he said, I have an idea for the lightsaber. He goes, I think these things are too clean and rigid looking. He said, you should make one that is like barbaric looking and has odd shapes and stuff. And that was the inspiration for Kylo Ren's lightsaber in those new movies.
Johnny, he
actually influenced the new Star Wars movie.
Not a surprise.
Crazy, right?
Yeah. I think that's one of the takeaways from this book for me. And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, is designers, and maybe it's just part of, they're not necessarily all like this, but there's a certain arrogance where you just say, no. This is good and right, and that's not, and I know, and you don't.
It's right. In other words, don't worry about the business. The business will take care of itself. Form over function.
Yeah.
Right.
It was a problem.
Although, on the flip side, he did lots of amazing
beautiful
things.
Beautiful stuff.
It's a hard
thing. I'm still wearing the watch, you know.
Sure.
Anyway, well, that'll be a fun conversation tomorrow on Track.
That's a great book. Mm-hmm. It's a great book.
It is. We were talking about great business.
Mm-hmm.
Really tech business books, and I put a list up on our Twit social of a few of them, and we mentioned Showstoppers, G. Pascal, Zachary's book about NT, and Dave Cutler.
I think the Steve Jobs biography falls into this, because those crucial chapters about the iPhone, the iPad especially, and a few others are just, I re-listen to them. I mean,
They're exercise. For us, because we covered it, it's interesting because we're hearing details behind the scenes that we didn't know, or we kind of thought but weren't sure, confirming our thoughts, that kind of thing. But it's also, they're great sagas of Tracy Kidder's Soul of the New Machine, about Data General creating a mini computer. It's an old one, Stephen Levy's Hackers. Yep. And the three of us have said, we wish there were more books these days like that. And
which is why this new one is so great.
You, Paul Thurrott, and you, Mary Jo Foley, you've got to get to work.
Guys,
thank you. No. I've been begging her for years.
Let's not forget
a second voice has arisen.
3.0. I mean, honestly.
I'm happy to be a background consultant when Paul writes the History of Windows book, but I am not participating.
Okay. You could be his deep throat. You could be his...
Come on, me, you, Richard Campbell.
Insider.
This would be great.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wouldn't that be a good book? Wouldn't you?
Right?
Show of hands. Look at that. Everybody. They all
Everybody.
Want it. They all want it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's, meanwhile... episode,
back at the ranch.
Back at the ranch, episode 777, and we're back with Outlook.
Yeah.
Now, this is the official preview, not the leaked one that you guys had.
Mm-hmm.
One
out. So a week ago, this leaked. And at the time, they said, you know what? Their actual official release in preview will be out in the coming weeks. Whenever they say in the coming weeks, I'm like, oh, yeah. Okay, so add three months, right?
Yeah.
And then yesterday, it just shows up. The version for Windows is out in beta. I'm like, well, there it is. Okay.
And... Is it the same as the one that you guys got?
Well,
I'm glad you asked. So I don't know, and here's why. There are like 118 requirements to getting this thing going, so I'm a little preoccupied this week. So I was going to install it, but I just said, I can't deal with this. It basically, first of all, you have to be a manager of a commercial or education tenant at Microsoft 365. You have to enable it. Then as a user, you have to run and configure Outlook for Windows, which I never do because I hate Outlook. And then there's a switch in there that you can turn. You have to put your, as a user, put the machine into a went to the beta channel for Office Insider program. Kind of goes on and on. So I looked at all the things and I said, I can't. But based on the screenshots, I don't know. Because they describe things that looked, I just didn't see. But then I wouldn't have known to have looked. So it looks complete, perhaps.
I think some of these things are in process of being turned on, too. Like they mentioned loop components, right, being part of the new version. And I've heard from some people who had the leaked version, they didn't think they had the loop components. So
yeah, actually, so let's talk about that real quick for a second, because I was talking to Brad this morning, and he said, you know, I have a theory about why this thing needed to be a web app. I'm like, oh, bring it on. That's great. And just as sort of a historical background, it's not that far in the history, but in recent years, and I don't remember when this started, Microsoft moved to a web-based extension model for Office applications, right? They used to use VBA back in the day, you know, whatever. And one of the advantages of doing that for Outlook is that if someone writes an extension, or if Microsoft wants to extend the functionality of Outlook, they do so using web technologies, and it works across all of the clients. So Office for Windows, the web versions, you know, Outlook.com and Office Outlook for the web. And I assume for the Mac, I don't actually know too much about Outlook for the Mac, I'm sorry, but I assume that must be in the system as well. Brad says, I think the reason they went to this web app is because they needed to do this for loop components. Loop components are going to work inside of the various Office apps, Teams especially, of course. Teams is web-based. Maybe this is why they're pushing to make Outlook a web app. So not just the extension model, but the entire app. You know, that somehow for the deep integration that loop components will require, maybe it had to be on the web, and maybe that's why it took so long. That's a good theory.
Also, this is a WebView 2 app instead of an Electron app, and that's also what the new Teams is, right? Teams 2 is supposed to be that.
Yeah,
as well,
so that's, right? In other words, Chromium-based.
Right.
You know, relatively lightweight, you know, compared to
Electron, web which is what they're using.
Electron
now,
especially,
right?
Yeah. But even React and things like that can be heavy.
Yeah. Right.
This should be a little more lightweight.
Right. I mean, the big picture reason Microsoft wants to do this is Monarch. This is a thing called One Outlook that we're talking about. They want the same code base for the Mac, for web, and Windows because it's easier for them, right? If they have one code base instead of three code bases, they can update it more quickly, fix bugs more quickly, not have to do all these separate updates for every single platform like they do now.
That's right.
So
it's also
that's one reason they want it.
That's better for everybody, right? Because it allows, no matter what platform you're using, you're going to get the latest updates or the latest security fixes or whatever it might be. I guess the one asterisk there might be there are power users on Outlook for Windows today who probably are looking at this a little nervously.
Yes, they are. Oh, yeah. I'm hearing from all of them on Twitter.
Yeah. Right.
They're like, I am not touching that piece of junk. I already hate it. Yeah. I don't want it. I hope I don't have to have it. And
are there features missing? Is that why? Or are they...
There's some features that aren't there, and some are on the list to come. Like they put out a list yesterday saying, here's what's on our roadmap for the more immediate term, the longer term, and things we're investigating, right? So some of the things that people were crying about, sorry, I don't mean to be pejorative, but but I just was. like Quick Steps, I'm like, what the heck is Quick Steps? But now I know because I looked it up. So Quick Steps, it lets you, I guess, like set up something to go automatically into a folder when you get it in your inbox. That's coming. That's on the roadmap to come. But people are like, without Quick Steps, I don't want that. Okay. Everybody has the feature set of things they can't live without in Outlook, right?
I mean, Outlook architecturally is sort of the original Teams in the sense that it's a big, complex application with lots of modules, extensibility, lots of add-ins. People have configured it the way they want. This thing dates back to the 1990s. The original version of Outlook is from 1997, but it's really based on Schedule Plus, which is from earlier than that. I don't remember when Schedule Plus debuted, but it, you know, it's a big complex application, and that for some people that's terrible. I hate it. I personally think it's big, slow to load, et cetera. But for people who are, like I said, power users who need these like kind of esoteric features sometimes, to us, they can't let go of it. It's just because it does everything they expect and want. You
know? Yeah. There's two big features that are missing, but they're listed as definitely coming. One is offline access. That's coming. Multiple account access also coming. Like, that's not in there yet. So everyone's like, can I add this account? Can I add my Gmail? Can I add this? Not yet, but you will. It's on the list of things that are on the immediate roadmap. So it's a preview, right? This is an early build. Microsoft's been using it internally for months. Like, I've known people at Microsoft saying, I've had the Monarch thing for months.
Probably many
but
months,
this,
you know.
Yeah, many months. Yeah. Yeah. So this is just the first time that Windows users who aren't part of Microsoft are getting it officially from Microsoft. Now, I have a question for you, Paul. The Mac client. Okay.
Right.
So in Microsoft's blog post yesterday, they said, oh, yeah, and we already have a new version of Outlook for the Mac. And they made it seem like they consider that one Outlook also. That came out in November. Right. And I'm like, I don't think that's the same, but maybe
it is. I didn't
either,
but I will point out, we said this last week, I think. We were originally expecting to see the Windows version in November.
That's true.
And who knows what caused that delay? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know enough about the Mac version of Outlook to speak intelligently about it. I suspect it works offline. Of course it does. I thought it was a native application. I didn't think it was a web app. I don't know.
Yeah.
I had
a couple of people ask me that because I put it as the last line of my story. I said, and they say the Mac version came out late last year. And one guy came at me on Twitter and he's like, that's not the same thing. And I'm like, okay, well, it's in their blog post. I'm not a Mac user. In fact, I hate the Mac. I hate Apple.
That's okay because I hate Outlook. Hey. So there.
Exactly. Just,
that went off in a weird
Everyone has hate. Everyone has hates. I don't know about the Mac version.
I'm sitting here worried you're going to ask me about it because I wouldn't go near it with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah.
You don't. You guys hate Outlook. I love Outlook.
Well, okay. So the new version of Outlook for the Mac is supposed to be much more streamlined than older versions.
It is.
Lightweight, et cetera. It's... Yeah. Outlook for the Mac was always kind of its own thing. It was developed later.
It's a separate product.
It's a separate product. It's not based on any of the code.
I got only one question. Still use one big honking great PSD file for all the data?
See, I don't know on the Mac. I doubt it. You know, that was one of my problems with the Windows version.
Yeah, that's it. That's just like the registry file. It's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. Oh, it's just. People used to carry around a back of it.
I know.
With them. When they moved around, just in case.
Right. You know, so on the roadmap thing, it says .pst file support is coming.
Can't wait.
Well, but that doesn't mean it's requiring it.
It doesn't.
So, for importing it or something like that, maybe.
Yeah. We don't know. That's all it says. It doesn't say anything like, and we revamped it, we fixed it, it's better. It doesn't say anything about that.
It also doesn't say anything about what the expected roadmap is here, right?
Get this. Outlook for the Mac uses instead of a PST file, an OLM file, which does exactly the same thing. Email messages, journal, calendar data, application data, similar to PST files. Of course, but they can't be opened by Outlook for Windows.
God forbid.
OLM file can contain multiple mailboxes.
Maybe it's more efficient, a more efficient format, because PST dates back probably to the late 90s.
And the point of PST and OLM is it is more efficient because it's a database, so you can search faster and stuff. But I'm a fan of keeping mail in plain text in folders. You're going to do it in the cloud anyway, right?
Yeah. But I think the point of the PST is you have that local database, and it's faster because it's there.
Yeah, and it's a database.
Right. And one of the tough things about setting up a new computer is the first time you run Outlook, you basically have to leave it for a long weekend to let it do everything it needs to do. So if you have that PST file, you can open that instead and it will configure everything for you and everything's there. So that makes the process go faster, which is, I think, why people would carry it around. But, I mean, seriously, it's the 21st century, guys. Like what are we doing here?
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of old school. See, I want my email to be in a machine-readable or human-readable format that's independent of...
Well, that's just objectively smart. I mean...
because there's no lock-in, right?
That's right. Yeah. And that file format, plain text basically, is a lot more lightweight than whatever Microsoft is using in PST.
Maybe not as fast as search, although with modern machines, I think it probably is. Same thing. You're going to keep your address book in vCards. You're going to keep your...
But who's searching? You're not really searching locally in an app, or you shouldn't be, right? The idea here is that you're part of an organization, You need to search things that aren't just cached locally. They're up in the cloud. They might be meetings from the past or emails or whatever it is.
I don't care what format the cloud data is in. That's fine. Who cares? Do whatever you want. Whatever works. Right. Don't lose it, but do whatever works for you.
I like to, as little as possible, to come down to the local computer. I have a...
Well, isn't that how IMAP works or even Exchange? It's a cached, you know, kind of version of what's up there.
Yeah, yeah.
Often with just the subject and the recipients.
So I guess this is the question you have to ask yourself if you're an Outlook user. What the hell is wrong with you? No, I'm sorry. No, are you the type of person who is comfortable using a web client like Outlook.com or Outlook on the web? And if you're just like, yeah, that's fine, then this thing immediately will be fine for you. But if you recoil at this because you have some specific requirement with Outlook for Windows today, this is going to be a tough road. And hopefully, and we don't know how long it's going to take.
Right.
Right now, it's weird the way they do it. There's actually a switch in Outlook for Windows that will enable you to access this client. It's not a separate thing. Well, it is a separate thing, obviously, but it's not just sitting there side by side with it by default. I mean, in the future, you have to think it will. And then you also have to think Outlook for Windows, the classic version, will be de-emphasized, you know?
It'll take a while, probably, because, you know, Microsoft never does anything like that fast, right? It'll be like side by side, and you'll have the option, and then maybe years will go by, is my guess, about
The thing you got to do is kind of compare the life cycle of this thing with your retirement date and see if they intersect, you know, and maybe it'll be okay.
Yeah, there's some other new features, though, that I want to call out besides the bad ones.
Actually, there are some interesting new features.
Yeah,
for sure.
So in the new Outlook, the one that they just started testing, they've got the thing they call calendar boards. Calendar boards, if you remember this was, I went and looked back when this was, 2020, Microsoft had this thing called Outlook Spaces that they started testing. And it's made inside of your Outlook, like a blank canvas where you could drag things, right? You could drag like documents and to-do lists and this and that. It was codenamed Project Mocha. And then they just one day dropped it and they said, oh, yeah, so instead of Outlook Spaces, we're going to make that part of this calendar boards feature. And this calendar boards thing is in the new Outlook client.
That's right.
So I'm kind of curious how that's going to work and if I'm going to like that or not.
It looks like people sticking sticky notes on a board, kind of.
It does.
They're different size things.
Use it for my vision board?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can use it for that. Or if you're hunting a serial killer and you need to draw string between
things.
Can I
do string?
Yep.
It's for that, too. Can plot out the Gambino crime family on it?
That
sounds great.
Like, they made OneNote for journalists, and they made this for serial hunters. Yeah. Serial killer hunters.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a cool, potentially interesting new feature. Mm-hmm. Then they've also got this thing. It's a little hard to explain. So you know how in Outlook you can at people? Like if I put at Therat, you would be like, you'd see something when I send an email. It would like highlight it.
Make sure
you saw
that's
it.
Right. Yep, it's a link.
So now
that's a nice feature. I like that.
Yeah, so now they're going to, in Outlook, I don't even know how they're going to do this, but it's kind of intriguing. They're going to let people at the name of a file on your PC to attach it.
Nice.
So that's cool. The only downside for me, somebody disorganized like me, is I don't have any kind of file naming convention whatsoever.
Do you even have files?
It's all on the desktop. Mary Jo.
I have very few files. It is pretty much. It's not on my desktop, but like my file naming system is so like arcane, not organized. So if I was even trying to think of the name of a file to attach, I'd be like, I don't know.
So if this thing could look inside files, this would probably be very useful for you as well, right?
It would.
And no matter how organized people are, and I'm organized to a fault, and it certainly hasn't helped me. You know, I often have to look for something and I have to think about where it might be or where it could be. And you kind of spend time navigating around. If you could do an at and then start typing and have it bring up choices.
That would be good. That would be great.
Like search, basically. Yeah, that could be really useful.
See, these are all actually arguments for using Outlook. It's business focused, isn't it? I mean, that's That's really maybe why I don't use it or need it, is because...
That's right.
But I could see the usefulness, you know, if you're using it in an organization, adding like, somebody or adding a file. Sure. That's, I could see the usefulness of that.
It looks good on you, is what you're trying to say.
Yeah, not on me, but on you. You wore it well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, there's a worrisome feature in here that I'm already worrying about. The reminders thing. So there's a feature in this where... Outlook is going to decide for you if a message seems important, and it's going to keep reminding you about it until you turn it off.
That's
like, okay, guys, there's a reason I hate focused inbox. This automatic machine does this for you thing. It doesn't work for me, right? It just never works.
So I use Gmail for my work stuff, and Gmail has a feature like that. It will surface an email from three or
as it a comes folder, up to right? Top. Like important.
No, it's a little. It's just a message. In other words, I got some kind of an email. Someone said, "Hey, are you available on Tuesday or something?" And I never replied to it. And then it comes out. In fact, let me just look. I might even have one there right now. I must have gotten rid of it. I saw one recently.
Gmail will also say, "Oh, you haven't read this newsletter in a while. Do you want to unsubscribe?"
That's good.
Things like that are useful.
That's a very useful feature. Yeah.
The pinning of something is deciding for me. It's important. Like you don't know what I think is important.
Well, maybe though are some signals that are pretty concrete. Like it came from the boss 2 weeks ago. You never replied.
And it might be.
No, I ignore those all the time.
So you mentioned scoff laws like you, Mary Jo.
So Mary Jo mentioned pinning, which is another feature, which may even be an Outlook today. I'm not even sure, but the pinning is kind of the manual version of that. Because you can star things today, and I do that, but they still move down in the list. So pinning is something like, this is important. I can't deal with this now. Keep it at the top of my inbox so I always see it until I get rid
that's
of it.
Good.
And
that's good.
All email has flagging or something like that.
That kind of thing is good. Yeah. That like when you decide it's important and you pin it. Right.
So I'll just say the feature that you don't like, whatever it's, what's it called? The what is it called? I don't even know. Recommendations or whatever. The similar feature in Gmail, when that pops up, I actually don't, it doesn't bother me. Sometimes it's useful because sometimes I just forget. I get a lot of email, you know, or I'm busy like I am this week.
Yeah.
And I forget things. And then I see it. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. And I need to follow up on this. Or it surfaces and I say, yeah, I don't care. And then you can click whatever. I don't know how you click it, but it's something you can click and it says it goes away. So I don't know. No. You get that look on your face like, I hear you. I am not listening to you.
Yeah. It's a no for me, as Simon Cowell would say. Okay. No, that's a no.
That's a no.
That feature has to have a turn off button that is permanent and you never see it ever.
I bet it does. Or worst case scenario, it's something that's configurable from your organization.
Yeah.
Right. Or it's going to be like focused inbox and you turn it off and it always tries to come back on every single
time. Putting
in
features if you can turn them off and stay off is okay with me.
If it stays off, that's good.
In an ideal world, this would sync back to your settings and you configure this on a different device. It knows you don't like it.
Correct.
Yep. But they don't ever do that.
I do like the idea of this becoming a view in loop. This is the loop is their Notion.
The loop component things.
Copycat. Yeah. Yep. I think that's an
interesting
idea.
Two loop things, right? So there's a loop thing that we don't know. We don't know when this is coming. The loop app that's like Notion. Then there are these things called loop components that are discrete things like a to-do list or an email.
But they go
Excel,
hand in hand because you could embed them in your
it's
loop.
It's a two-way street.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So this in email, it's like going to have a drop down where you can pick off like a component and say, you know, Excel spreadsheet. Yeah. And then you put it in your email. And then everybody who gets the email can update it if you give them permissions and automatically update it.
I'm loving this idea.
The moment you do it.
Yeah.
The other nice thing about this system is that with Outlook moving to be architecturally, maybe not the right word, but more like a Teams in some way. You know, you have this option. I like to work in Outlook, and so all that stuff is there. I like to work in Teams, so all that stuff is there.
Right.
It lets people work the way they want, which I think was one of the big pushbacks against Teams when it first came. It was like, wait a minute, we're all moving to chat like we're teenagers now. although I think people, you know, over time have seen the value of chat-based communication, honestly.
Microsoft has this idea. You're right. You're exactly right. This is what they're doing. They have these things they call their hubs. Teams is a hub, And email is a hub. And they know some people organize their whole life around email and some organize their whole life around Teams. So they're trying to make it so developers, when they write an app, it can be an app for Teams and Outlook. Like the same app can work in both places, right?
The other thing is that calendar board feature that used to be Project Mocha is in many ways like Notion itself.
It is.
You can plug different components into it, different data sources, different things, and you have this kind of a almost a dashboard of things that are important to you. I mean, it's a pretty good idea.
I mean, in my Outlook.com now, I have my calendar pinned to the side, so it's always open. Because I like that. I like having that always right there. Yep. So when I'm like doing email, I can just look at, oh yeah, I can do this or I can't.
Yep.
So this board thing is going to be like that. It's going to let you see a lot of different things while you're
And it's one of several things you can pin over there, right? There's like a kind of a My Day view, which, you know, Outlook has had some version of this. I mean, probably since just a long time ago, 2000, 2001, whatever. Yeah. But, yeah, again, the idea here is we all work a little differently. We all have our own preferences, and you can pin or not pin whatever it is you want over there, and it's created this custom view that works for you. So that's all good.
Yep. Yeah. But you know what was so funny? It was so funny how low-key this announcement was yesterday, right? They didn't even, like, tip us to it. Like, a couple of our frequent readers and contributors, like Taro Elhon, and he saw it, and he goes, hey, I don't know if you saw, they just dropped Project Monarch. Like, there it is.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, don't. Thanks.
It's not like we haven't been working on this for 3 years with constant delays and everyone's been waiting for it. No, that never happened. It's just a little project, you know? Yeah.
I really thought it would be. I actually was wondering if they were going to announce that at Build. Like, I think this is a pretty big deal, right?
I think because of the leaks, and I think what was going to happen was some of that back end functionality was going to become enabled, and they didn't want people to see it out of context in the leak. And they said, "Look, we just got to just come clean about it." And maybe Build will be the loop part of it, and they'll talk about all the extensibility and the standalone loop. Application too. So we'll see. That's soon, right? Next week.
Yeah. So Bill, here, speaking of Taro, it is next week. Speaking of Taro, he's clarifying the Mac stuff for us. So he said, the current Outlook for Mac preview is a native app. It's not the WebView app, right?
That's what I thought.
And he said the Mac OS preview is on the roadmap for the WebView 2 team. So there is a Mac Outlook preview out there that is not the same thing as this.
Well, good of them to mention that in the blog post like it was.
I know, right? Yeah, weird. I got to go back and fix my story.
I think what they're trying to show is some continuum of updates on Outlook. Yeah. Like, you know, we've been busy. We work on all these different things. We just did this. Now we're doing this, you know. Right. But it did make it seem like they were somehow the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So Project Monarch, finally we have the code officially. There it is. Starting with Windows.
As with the leak, it was a little underwhelming in a sense. Not because it's bad, but there was such a buildup to this that it was like, wait, this is just the web app? I don't know. Okay.
Yeah.
I hope they are not basing offline support on a PSD file, by the way. I guess we'll see, but.
Yeah.
All right, I want to take a little break. We have many more fabulous subjects to talk about.
To beat to death.
To beat
as only we can.
To death. But no, I think, you know, so many people use Outlook. It is really the backbone of a lot of enterprises. So, it's you know, this is a big subject. It's a big deal that they, this Project Monarch is finally here. Woo!
Woo!
Woo! A lot of us really have looked to other ways of communicating over email. I don't know about you. I find emails very, very difficult, especially for like real-time conversation. Here at Twit, we use Slack, like a lot of enterprises do. And our sponsor for this segment is actually, I think, a very clever use of Slack, Collide. It's a new take on Endpoint Manager, K-O-L-I-D-E. The problem with endpoint management, of course, is they're really a lot of ID departments are very coercive. You know, maybe yours, like, you got to do this. I understand. Believe me, I'm not saying no. I completely understand. To the point where they'll, you know, put crazy glue in USB ports, things like that. There is a problem, though, and you maybe have already experienced that. The more you push that way, the more likely the user, especially now that users are working at home, are going to throw up their hand and say, forget it, I'm just going to use my laptop. And that's worse for everybody. that's not the right answer to endpoint management. So Collide answers the kind of age-old question of how do we get users to be more secure and to get them more involved so they kind of understand what they're doing and buy into it. And I love this idea. This is complete contrast to, you know, MDM, other old school device management systems. It's built by like-minded security practitioners who understand how important this stuff is, but who have seen just how MDM was disrupting their users, frustrating them, even causing them to switch to their personal hardware without telling anyone, and that is not good. Collide doesn't lock down a device. It takes a user-focused approach that communicates security recommendations to your employees directly on Slack. Now, you got to be a Slack house. So if you're not, you should probably move to Slack. Honestly, it's that good. We are. What happens is Collide, the first thing that happens is the new employee or when you start using Collide, your employees get a Slack message that says, hey, let's install the Collide endpoint agent. We're going to do this together. The employee will actually do it. They're learning. They're understanding better what's going on. So they feel more in control. And then, and from then on, Collide's going to keep an eye on what's going on. The agent will monitor. And if it sees a security flaw or proactively, you know, if you want to start warning people about spear phishing and things, it'll send a Slack message with recommendations. Simple things like, you know, the screen lock isn't set correctly. And so Collide will send a Slack message saying, hey, I noticed your screen lock is not password protected. You know that means when you go to lunch, anybody could send an email from your machine. Let me help you fix that. And it walks them through. Even kind of more nuanced things like setting up two-factor backups. Or maybe even like they did that, but then the backup codes are in their download folder, unencrypted, wide open. And Collide will notice that and they'll say, hey, thank you for setting up two-factor. But you know, in your download folder, the codes are still there. Let's move them somewhere more secure. And because it's talking directly to the users, Collide is educating them about the company's policies, how to keep their devices secure using real examples, not theoretical scenarios. And they feel more involved. You want a workforce that is paying attention. That's exactly what Collide does. I think it's so brilliant. Linux, Mac, Windows puts end users first for any team that uses Slack, completely cross-platform, as is Slack, right? You can get endpoint management that puts users first at collide.com/WW. Learn more. Activate a 14-day trial free today. You don't need to give them a credit card. Just, you know, try it for free. I think you'll really be impressed. Even if you just go to the website, you'll see some examples of Collide messages. And I think you'll see what a great idea this is. KOLIDE.com/WW. Right now, you can get a goodie bag of Collide swag, too, after signing up for a new trial as their way of saying thank you. KOLIDE, collide.com/WW. We thank them so much for supporting Windows Weekly. And we thank you for supporting Windows Weekly. When you use that address, it lets them know that you saw it here. And that's really important to us on the show. collide.com/WW. Let's talk about Microsoft 365. I mean, we already have, but there's more. Yeah. There's more.
Yeah, we mentioned Microsoft Teams, and you'll be happy to know that your nightmare is over after only 5 years. Microsoft Teams is now available in the Microsoft Store, as we call it now.
It wasn't before?
No. It was a hard computer science problem.
That's hysterical.
There was something about the design of the Teams website where I, you know, every time I set up a computer, I have to install Teams, and I have to go to the web, and I would type in download Microsoft Teams, and it would go to that page. And I'd click on the consumer version by mistake because for some reason it just seemed like that was the right thing to do. And then I would install it, try to sign it with my commercial account. I'd be told I could. Oh, no, actually, I'm sorry. It would tell me I already have it. Then I would go back to the site, which I've closed the browser, you know. So now you can get it through the store. And is that easier? I don't know. Maybe. But it's only the commercial version. Obviously, if you have Windows 11, you get the consumer version built into the system. If you have Windows 10, you have to download it, load that separately as well. I don't know why anyone would, but the commercial version is actually very useful. So I could see getting that through the store.
Yeah.
Yeah. No big deal. It's nice. It's identical to my understanding. I don't think there's any difference or any advantage or disadvantage to getting it that way, but it is available.
Good.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
Now, I forgot to put this in the notes, but I don't know if you saw that Microsoft is going to change Quick Assist to be a store app also.
Yes, that's right.
So we should
explain what that means.
We should. So Quick Assist is this tool you can use to help people remotely who need you to take control of their PC. It's built into Windows 10, Windows 11. If you use it right now, like on your Windows machine, it'll give you a pop-up message that says, as of May, I think it's May 23rd, you are going to have to go get the store app to continue using Quick Assist. I think this is kind of a mistake on Microsoft's part because
you're not alone.
I use this with my mom when I need to help her with something with her PC. If she has to go get an app from the store, I mean, it's not that hard, but like trying to talk her through that, I think you have to change the local administrator setting to enable someone to use it. Yeah, and I just was looking at all these things. I'm like, oh, man, it's already hard enough to get her to type in Quick Assist in the search box. Like,
what's the rationale for this change? Have you seen anything?
I have not seen anything, but I don't know if you remember when we were first hearing about this thing, like Feature Experience Pack, and we were trying to figure out what that was. One of the things that was in that category of things that would be updated independently was Quick Assist. And I don't think it dawned on me what that meant until now. I'm like, oh, that means it's going to be an app that's updated and available through the store for some reason.
Given the way that Microsoft updates Windows now, by which I mean continuously, what's the difference? You know, why can't it just be in the application? Yeah, it tells you to go get the new version from the store. I'd like to know what they're doing there. I don't know. I can't understand what the point of that is.
I'm not really sure.
Get you used to using the store.
Hopefully what your mother's problem is that the store's not working because you're not going to be able to help her with that.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, so and then once you have the app, at least you don't have to do it every time. Like if I can get it on our PC once, it'll be there.
And update automatically and all that stuff. I mean, that's good, right?
Yeah, I guess. But how much do you really need to update Quick Assist?
Well, I don't know, but if there were a flaw in it, you'd want it updated. So,
The point is they can do that in Windows. They don't have to wait for
Tuesday,
right? Okay. Yeah, I don't understand. Yeah.
I'm thinking that stuff that's in the App Store gets automatically updated at any old time, right?
Yeah.
Is that not the case on Windows?
No, that's true. That's true. But that's true it could be true of an app that comes with Windows too. I don't.
Yeah, I mean they could push out an update, but they don't like to, right? They don't.
No.
No. I don't know. I feel like something that you get in a store is more likely to be up to date.
I think Windows, like iOS, like Android, is one of those things where if you randomly one day say, I'm just going to see what apps are available, you'll find there are like 117 updates. I mean, it's weird
True. You would think they'd be updating in the background, but everything does that
it's
too.
Not.
My iPhone does that too. I think it's just staged out or something.
The idea is don't look.
You'll
wonder what's,
it is. Don't be a seeker.
What's going, why
don't
is
be
this,
a seeker,
what?
No. People.
Yeah.
Do not seek, strange. Or ye shall find.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yet lest ye shall find.
Yeah, that might come up on your call-in show, though, Leo, when people can't see Quick Assist anymore.
Yeah, sure it will.
Yeah.
And your mom, you say you want your mom to have Quick Assist.
Yeah, well, because whenever she's like, can you just take control of my PC?
That way you can easily fix it.
Right, so I'll just be like, okay, Mom, you have to call up Quick Assist. She goes, what? What are you telling me? I said, type in Quick Assist. Quick Resist? No, Quick Assist. I'm like, start typing the word quick. She goes, are you saying quick, like fast?
Oh, Lord.
Yes.
Oh, Lord.
And I'm like, okay, now they're going to give you a code that you have to read me the number, and I have to put it in my system. And you have to, don't touch it while I'm, like, controlling your PC.
The only thing
I'm
better
like,
than kids is parents.
Yeah,
my mother, I would have told this story before. My mother's so disconnected from what I do for a living that one time she asked me, this is a few years ago now, but she said, still writing about Microsoft, right? I said, yeah, Mom. And she goes, what about that other company? And I'm like, that other company? And she says, yeah. And I said, Apple? And she goes, yeah, that one. Are they still around? And I'm
like, I love normals. Yes. I love them.
Yes.
Yeah, my mom said, you still work? I said, yeah, yes. I still have Twit. She said, I thought you sold that a long time ago. I said, no. I'm still doing it.
Oh. My mom knows you, Leo. She always says, how's Leo?
Oh, that's nice. Oh, I'm glad to hear
Maybe
that.
Leo should help your brother.
No.
Oh, that would be hilarious if I had my mom call in on your show sometime.
Well, that's okay. Totally could. That'd be hysterical. I'd love that.
Oh, man.
That's funny.
She's more than welcome to anytime. And I'll ask about Quick Assist.
Yeah. Oh, God.
I suppose telling you that Control Win Q.
I know. Somebody else said, tell her Control Win Q. I'm like, oh, guys, like,
that's
no.
All
like,
what's Control?
One time I told my mom to press Control Alt Delete, and she goes, okay. And I just hear the phone on the, go down. And I'm like, Mom. She's like, no, I can't do this. I can't press three
Take
keys
three
at
fingers.
Once if I have the phone.
That's a good point.
I'm like, oh, yeah.
Hey, Leo rebooted the computer one time while we were recording Windows Weekly. Hey. So,
I think I even asked you ahead of time. I said, should I press return? And you said, no. And that was that was the last we heard of Paul.
Yeah.
So I do see this Bleeping Computer article where Windows admins have been expressing their dismay about Microsoft's decision to move Quick Assist to the store. I just think that's a better place for it. I think that's just a more logical.
Can't we just have some things like that are utilities still in Windows?
Well, that's true. It should just be always there. But I think maybe that some people would not like having a remote access program always running on their system kind of.
So it's the way it is today is the existing app acts like sort of a stub.
It so doesn't do anything.
It tells you have to go to the store. You can click a button. So if that continues, that's okay. At least the people who are trying to find it find something, and then they know they have to update.
Yeah.
As long as they don't just remove it without any message whatsoever.
Yeah.
I think the IT guys are more saying, like, I want this on all my computers. Do I have to go to each computer one by one?
Yeah.
Because that's no fun, right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, at least we know where it is. It's the little devil's hiding now. We know where to find it. Secure Network for Edge is out.
Sort of. So this has come up a few times in the past. This is that sort of limited VPN that Microsoft is adding to Microsoft Edge. It's in the Canary Channel. There was some documentation, I think up on docs.microsoft.com, that explained how it worked, and that's how most people kind of found out about it. If you do install the Canary version of Microsoft Edge, what I found, because I've done this on a few computers, you probably won't get it. You know, it's one of those things that kind of rolls out over time. So it's we still don't have the answers to our questions. You know, we know that there's some sort of limited data sharing with Cloudflare that will be automatically deleted pretty quickly. We know that you can get a gigabyte for free every month. We don't know if they're going to offer the ability to get more data, or if they're going to offer Microsoft 365 subscribers a higher allotment or anything like that. So it's still kind of early days. I guess the thing that's happened here is sort of like what happened with the new Outlook. It basically just kind of went official, you know. Mm-hmm. So, it leaked. People, you know, at least documentation leaked. I have yet to see it. So I'm eager to write about this. I have Edge Canary now on both of the computers I have with me. You know, just in case. I'd like to use a VPN from Mexico. That'd be fun. So we'll see. But they basically acknowledged it, I guess, is what this says. And it's going to be called Edge Secure Network because Edge VPN is too complicated or something.
Well, because it's not really a VPN either, right? So they don't want to call it that. And probably there are a lot of third-party VPN providers
would be very upset if they did.
True.
Well, it's not like they're putting antivirus in Windows, Leo. Come on, it's fine.
You know, we thought when they announced that years ago that that would be the end for third-party antiviruses, but they're bigger than ever. In fact, I was just looking at the order of my Dell 15-inch Windows 11 machine.
Yeah.
And I apparently paid $50 for McAfee Secure Safe Forever for a year. But I didn't.
Oh.
But they just build that in.
Yeah.
Ew.
Right?
Did you get charged for it? Is it?
Yeah. Well, it's, I guess. I mean.
Oh, boy. That's not okay.
That's not okay.
No.
I'd give them a call.
I should call them and say, look, I don't want that. They haven't started building it.
Yeah, but you know what? You don't want to delay it till September either.
Yeah, we could do that for you. When do you want to get your computer in 2025? You have your choice of months.
Yep.
Yeah, you're right. I don't want to mess with it.
I don't know. Just a thought.
It just, you know, so again, there's still a brisk market for antivirus, third-party antivirus on Windows, even though you probably don't need it.
I don't think anyone needs it.
No. Probably don't.
But what do I know?
Probably don't. Microsoft Windows 11. Three words that seldom go together. No, they always go together. And now it's available for broad deployment. What?
And we have to add the phrase, whatever that means.
What the hell?
This comes up every version of Windows.
It does.
So it wasn't before?
Well...
As of May 17th, it is designated for broad deployment.
Tell me if, Mary Jo, if this is what you think this means, because this is my understanding. They deploy Windows 11 in this case, or any new version of Windows, to a subset of the machines out there. Right. You can get it through Windows Update. They have a probably like a chart or a table or something. They're looking at configurations, known good configurations. They want to send it to the people that they know will have the best experience and the fewest problems first.
Yep.
Depending on how that goes, they broaden it out. Over time, they hit different milestones, different percentages of the population. I believe that general or broad deployment means there are no more major roadblocks or showstoppers or whatever. That if your hardware is technically compatible with Windows 11, you know, 8th gen or newer on the Intel side, et cetera, you will now get it, basically. If you go to Windows Update and you're on Windows 10, you will be offered Windows 11. I think that's what that means.
Because it's under the known issues and notifications.
Yeah.
So this is like a notification that's good. Is it for IT people more than anything? Who's this for?
Well, they're letting IT people know that they're going to be pushing it through Windows Update and the update mechanisms, right? So that they'll know that people are going to start getting it. And they'll have the option, unless their organization turns it off, I believe, to stay on Windows 10 or go to 11. Right. I mean, some organizations will just block you and say, you're staying on 10. Like, you don't care if you get that note, right?
Most of them should have done this months ago, right? They would have.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Is that what safeguard holds are?
Yeah, that is. Yeah. Safeguard holds, safeguard holds, I think, means Microsoft doesn't push it out because... It knows that certain machines will have problems with certain configurations.
Yeah, maybe you have a network card or something that has issues.
Right.
Windows 11.
Right.
So there are no known big issues.
Right. So now it's basically been in the market, for how long?
Right.
Well, so it's October, so 8 months-ish, I guess.
8 months.
Seven,
is that all?
7 8 months.
Wow.
I know. Funny? It feels so much longer, doesn't it? I'm like, hasn't it been a couple of years? Yes.
It's now the. Is this make it the official version of Windows now? Kind of. Is that kind of what this?
Well, the
means?
Version hasn't. Well, the version has changed, but it's separate from this. That doesn't impact. There's kind of two separate issues. This is just
10 is still considered to be an official.
It is
version of
and
Windows.
The vast majority of Windows PCs are on 10.
Yeah. Okay. And will be, for some time to come, I would think.
Okay. Time for another break. Our show today brought to you by a name you know, Acronis. How many years? For years we've been recommending Acronis True Image as being like kind of the king of the imaging tools. Well, Acronis has bundled True Image into a tool called Acronis Cyber Protect Home Office, which solves the two issues that many people and enterprises and home offices have the risk of data loss from hard drive failure and coffee spills, but also from ransomware and other cyber threats. Acronis Cyber Protect Home Office, formerly Acronis Truage, offers everything you need to safeguard your device. It's the only cyber protection solution that delivers a unique integration of data protection and cybersecurity in one app. Windows and macOS and Android and iOS devices can take advantage of Acronis Cyber Protect Home Office. Of course, the one of the great benefits of imaging is it's quick for backup and recovery because it backs up everything. It makes a complete image of your hard drive, so you'll never lose precious files or expensive applications. And you can restore a full system in minutes, but you can also, this is important to know, do individual files as well, which means you can back up what you want, where you want, locally. You can even do it, this is something relatively new, the Acronis Cloud. So you've got cloud backup too. Imagine having an image in the cloud, which is great. You can restore your entire system in minutes, whether it's to new hardware or the original hardware. You can even do, and this is a great feature too, direct cloud-to-cloud backups of your Microsoft 365 account. That includes Outlook.com mail. It includes OneDrive. This is a great solution for keeping you backed up. If you're a business or a small business or home office, you need this kind of thing. And of course, from Acronis, you get advanced cybersecurity, which is there to stop any cyber attack from damaging that data or applications or even your system. It blocks attacks in real time before malware, ransomware, or crypto jackers can cause damage. It'll find any hidden infections lurking on your system with flexible antivirus scans. I had somebody call the radio show the other day saying, I want to image my drive, but I don't want to bring any malware along with it. This is what you need, right? This is what you need. You now can have confidence that your backup not only is secure, but it contains nothing dangerous in it. And management's a lot easier because you're using a single tool. You can reduce the complexity and the cost and the risk of using multiple solutions, maybe even incompatible solutions. Simplify your protection by managing everything through a single intuitive interface. Two-click setup and set and forget options means you don't have to think about it. You just get it done. Acronis Cyber Protect Home Office, more than just a backup, more than just an antivirus, it's peace of mind knowing your devices and backups are protected, your data is safe, accessible, private, authentic, and secure. Keep your digital world safe from all threats with the only cyber protection solution that delivers a unique integration of data protection and cybersecurity in one. It's Acronis Cyber Protect Home Office, formerly Acronis True Image. Go to the website, go.acronis.com/ww. That's go.acronis.com/ww. Don't forget to use that address so that they know you saw it here on Windows Weekly. go.acronis.com/ww. And we thank them so much for their support of the show. Back to Paul, Mary Jo, Windows Weekly. Okay, to balance out the giant Xbox news that's still to come, let's talk about what's going on inside Big Green. Does he call it Big Green anymore? Isn't
Big Green? Wasn't that Novell?
Oh, maybe Novell is Big Green. Big Red was Novell.
Oh, Big Red.
Big Blue is IBM.
Some people call them Green, but the Green is stuck,
that's
really
old school. That's old school. Green. What's going on inside Microsoft Corporate?
What is going on? Do you understand this? This is basically just job retention.
Some people at Microsoft are going to get more money because, as everyone knows, right now,
because Windows 8 was so successful,
the job climate is very robust right at the moment, and a lot of people have been picked off at Microsoft recently because other companies in the Pacific Northwest, especially, are paying more. So there's been a lot of employee complaints about, even though we make a lot of money here, we aren't being compensated the same as people at AWS and Google and Meta. So Satya sent out an email to everyone saying, we're investing in our annual rewards budget. We're going to double the global merit budget. It's not not everyone's getting a two-time raise or anything like this, but they're going to make merit raises higher and bigger.
I think it's just to prevent people from going elsewhere, basically.
Yeah, that's
how
pretty
I kind of took it. Okay, yeah.
Pretty much, yeah.
I think this is a problem with all these companies.
It is, right? Like, everybody's like, it's a free-for-all, like, pay-wise right now, because IT's a
didn't Apple, like, give people $200,000 not to go to Facebook?
Yeah.
There's a great story in that book we keep talking about where this group of high-placed engineers were going to leave the company, and they basically finally figured, we got to do something. And they said, look, we'll do anything. What do you have to do to stay? And I said, we want to make a car.
That's right. And, that was, to me, that was from the book.
Yeah.
The biggest revelation was...
Yep, yep.
The car project didn't come from Tim Cook
or
anybody else. It came from employees who
said,
we're going
to leave to go
to Tesla if you don't do it.
Wow. Yep, yep.
Wow.
Which just shows what a lame idea it is. Never do what employees want to do. I can tell you that right now.
Well, yeah, okay. There's a great Steve Jobs quote about that. You know, anyway, but yeah.
What did he say? Ask the employees what they want
to
do.
He basically did. He said, you don't hire smart people to tell them what
that's
to
true.
Do. You hire smart people so they tell you what they want to do.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. And then you say, no, we're not doing that.
Exactly.
Right. Well, you're still an employee, so you can say no. But, yeah, you know, the point is listen and then...
No, I thought that was fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's only gotten worse in the intervening years. I mean, keeping, you know, especially if you're stuck.
The car stuff in that book is some of the best. It's unbelievable. What they were working
on.
That's
what I'm reading tonight.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. It's crazy. Mm-hmm.
It's fun. All right, well, good. Let's hope that it works to keep... Microsoft stock is doing well, right?
Yeah. It's not doing as well as it
in
has.
Context. Right,
Yeah.
But all the big tech companies are down right now. I mean, I think they're still in the same position, you know, vis-a-vis the other companies, Apple and so forth.
Yeah.
Yeah, because a lot of compensation comes from stock options.
Stock awards.
So,
yeah,
if you don't have a strong stock price, strong growth...
Yeah.
It's hard to retain.
You gotta give money.
But yeah, where are you gonna go? Twitter?
Show me the money.
Right.
That's Twitter. how do you feel about volatility?
Oh Lord. Yeah, Microsoft's down quite a bit.
Yeah, everybody is though right now, right? Like I feel like the uncertainty of the times, the war in Ukraine.
Well, Apple, the one time $4 trillion company. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I was going to ask you guys what you thought of this. I saw somebody say, if Elon doesn't buy Twitter, who's the company most likely to step in? And I saw people saying Microsoft. I'm like, no.
Nobody. No.
No.
They've been trying to sell Twitter for years.
They have, right? Yeah.
Nobody wants Twitter.
After the TikTok thing, you guys, I was traumatized by that one.
I could see it, though. Like, oh,
no.
I'm upset that you haven't brought that up.
They should hold on. Twitter is now, so Elon's offering $54.20.
Right.
Twitter is now $36.86, which is a pretty clear signal that the stock market thinks this whole deal is kaput.
Yeah. Well, he's sent a lot of signals that Loki,
idiot.
The god of chaos?
He is chaos. Like,
how can he legally get out of it, though?
Like, well, Twitter
throws a grenade into the room.
That's what Twitter said. Right. No, Twitter said, no, we're going to hold him to it. He signed.
He didn't ask for due diligence before he signed.
This is what's
now
so annoying.
Suddenly, oh, wait, are there spam bots? I didn't think about that.
He specifically waived due diligence in his offer. Now he's doing it and says, well, wait a minute. If I had known, well, no, too bad, Elon.
You had a chance.
This is a great example of genius because people who are geniuses are terrible at everything else other than that one thing they're good at. And I don't know.
He sent a poop emoji to the CEO of Twitter.
Right. Yeah.
That's grown up.
Yeah, kidding.
We used to have a president that did the same thing. But yeah, for sure.
No, you know what? I don't think Donald Trump even sent a poop emoji.
Okay.
Even
he was banned
Trump
from Twitter before he could have.
Even Trump never sent a poop emoji. This is a new low for Twitter.
Yeah. All right. There you go.
Any shakeups at the Microsoft?
A few. Yeah. Yeah, well, this one was kind of not too surprising. So Microsoft has had a lot of turmoil in the partner channel lately. They've been adding new programs in that haven't been too popular with some of their partners and trying to change terms of existing partnership programs. The guy who was the face of this for the past year, he was the one they put out there every time is something unpopular was like, Rodney, go talk to the partners, right?
The John Cable of the partner program.
Pretty much. So yeah, Rodney Clark, channel chief at Microsoft, is taking a new role outside the company that was announced this week.
Tired of being a punching bag.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm going to be an executive officer at a publicly traded company that is a Microsoft partner, but he doesn't want to do this job anymore. And who blames him, right? Microsoft doesn't have a channel chief right now, and they said they will appoint one before July 1st, which is the start of their fiscal. And their partner show program is right after that. Yeah.
I mean, look, unfortunately for the partner program or for the partners, there's a lot less partnering going on these days, right? I mean, part of the problem with Microsoft doing all these first-party services now is that partners are kind of superfluous. So, we talk about like the evolution of the partner program, which is the wrong word. It's kind of the devolution. You know, they have to invent things that allow partners to make money that, to me, feel like these very short-term things. You know, sign people up for Microsoft 365, and we'll give you a little bonus, you know? And you're supposed to get that every year, I guess. But this in the past, partners would be servicing Office 365 or whatever back in the day. You know, small business server installs, whatever they were. And there's less and less, I think, for partners to do, meaning there's fewer ways for them to make money as well. And I think this is the problem. So this must be a terrible job to have to interact with these people.
No kidding.
No, seriously.
Being a channel chief is not a fun job at Microsoft. Yeah,
it's got to be terrible.
It is not.
Yeah.
I mean, the other problem is, you know, over the past few years, Microsoft has decided to kind of go direct with the bigger contracts, which isn't that surprising, right? Like when they talk on the call about multi-billion dollar deals and multiple million dollar Azure contracts, these are their contracts, right? Like them going to the customer and partnering, quote unquote, with the customer. It's not partners getting in on the action, right?
That's right.
The partners are getting kind of squeezed down to the smaller, mid to small size deals in many cases, and they're not happy about that either.
Yeah.
Yet, in spite of all this, how many partners does Microsoft have? Resellers? 400,000.
Whoa.
Yeah. Well, this is, but this is inertia almost, right? But where are they going to go? You know, there's
AWS.
No other Microsoft. Right. But I mean, you think Amazon's a better partner than Microsoft?
No, I don't. I don't. But I think, the point is, it's just like when people threaten to go Linux. Like, I don't like Windows 11. I'm going to go to Linux. And Microsoft's like, yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, good.
Enjoy yourself.
Yeah.
Mary Jo's mother said, look, I can't find this quick, whatever
it's called. Quick assist. I'm going to Linux.
Okay, Mom, open the terminal. And when you see the prompt, I want you to type these
words. She's like, Mary Jo, I'm trying to figure out this grep thing. Do you know the switches?
Do you know about grep? Can you help me? No, Mom. No.
Mom, I've been telling you, you got to use awk. It's not, Okay. Yeah. A little Linux humor in there. Cheer everybody up. Apple.
One more partner thing.
Okay, go ahead.
The European regulators.
That's what I was going to get to, because Apple and Google have been getting hit hard by the EU, and we feel like Microsoft's kind of slipped by in the U.S., but I guess they're
not
still
in the EU.
Still under some scrutiny.
Yeah. So there was a change they made in their licensing actually 3 years ago. In 2019, they made some changes that made it more expensive to run Microsoft software on other clouds. So if you were trying to run, say, SQL Server or even Windows on AWS or Google or Alibaba, it was going to start costing you a lot more money. At the time, the only people who complained were the big cloud vendors like AWS. They're like, hey, what's going on? And then when customers' contracts started coming up for renewal, which started happening in the past year or two, the customers suddenly saw the bill and they were like, what just happened to our bill? And it was because Microsoft changed the licensing. That's not me for a change. That's surprising.
Oh, now we've got two urban.
I'm not in Lower Macungie anymore.
I know. I'm like, wait, that's not
But wait
here.
A minute. The
what?
Sirens in Mexico sound the same as they do here.
They do. They're not European.
Darn it. Oh, well.
Yeah. But today, so Microsoft kind of got caught with their hand in the cookie jar. A few European cloud vendors went to EU and said, hey, this isn't okay. They started investigating what Microsoft was doing. So Brad Smith said, oh, sorry, we didn't really realize what was going on and we're going to fix it. So today there's a giant blog post. If you think Steven Sinofsky used to write long blog posts, you should see this Brad Smith blog post. It pulls out all the stops. There's actually a few lines that are actually the meat of it, which is we're going to undo some of these changes we did, but only for these smaller cloud vendors who are hosting our software for their customers. It doesn't say anything about undoing the AWS or the Google cloud limitations. So if you're a customer and you're running it directly yourself without going through one of these smaller vendors, it doesn't help you. I think their hand's going to get forced again. That's my guess about what's going to happen here, because this doesn't go far enough. But it's a start. At least they did something. Again, they did it because they got caught, not because they were doing the right thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, this I could see how they might say, hey, we're going to make money on you if you use our cloud, so we don't have to charge you much for the software. That's kind of a, I mean, I don't know what it is in the EU, I know, but and it's pretty standard way of doing business.
Right. And they said, hey, Google could do this or AWS.
Yeah, we give you discounts if you're using our stuff.
Yeah. Right. So, but the cloud vendors are like, well, wait a minute. Like, you were letting us do this before.
This is my big problem with the EU regulators is really they're just doing the work of other companies who are pissed off, competitors. And it's always driven by the competition, you know?
Well, right. So this is the antitrust difference between the US and the EU. And in Europe, it is about competition. I guess I'm of two minds on that. I mean, if you're a small company that's being shut out by one of the big tech companies, there's a little bit of a side issue because those small companies are always European and the big companies are always American. But, okay, get over that for a second. I mean, if there was no place for them to go to be heard, you know, that's what monopoly does, right? I mean, we kind of need this, someone to look, you know, some regulatory body to look at this. I think the problem is I can't think of a single time the EU has ever said, you know, Apple, Microsoft, Google, whatever it is, they're doing fine. Don't worry about it. You know, I think every time they investigate, they're like, oh yeah,
you're right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. We're changing this. Oh, yeah. This is going to go. Every time. So, and then maybe that's fair. Maybe that is literally what needs to happen. But it has become a pretty, the system seems almost, well, I shouldn't say it's game, because honestly, I don't know that I've ever disagreed with them, what they're doing. But it leaves open that possibility that if you can't compete, you can go through regulators and get your way that way. Mm-hmm. Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
All I know is that blog post is like 8,000 words long.
It is. It's such a long post. And most of it has nothing to do with the matter at hand. It's just like all the investments they've made in Europe and how they're loving Europe.
No, it's a lot of hand waving. Like, the idea is to distract, right?
Yeah. He's a lawyer. Brad Smith. He's the head lawyer at Microsoft.
He doesn't usually do this, though. This is unusual for him, something this long.
But this is for the public, not for regulators, right?
Right. Yeah. And you know, it's really hard to tell that they aren't really undoing the crux of what the problem is. I read it a few times. I'm like, I think they're fixing it. And then Wes Miller, who's a directions on Microsoft analyst, said, nah, they're not really fixing it. What they're doing is they're fixing it for a very narrow category of customers and not the bigger complaint, which is if you're a customer or a partner running directly on AWS or Google Cloud or Alibaba, it doesn't do anything for you.
So, right.
Yeah. And I'm guessing somebody will go back at them and point that out, and then maybe there'll be another 8,000 word blog post.
Right.
for the rest of us.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's do a little Xboxing and take your time because my $30 sandwich is here. So,
what is your $30 sandwich?
Before I get started,
I want to hear about it.
You want to see it?
My wife has showed up.
Oh, look what what did you get? Is that agua? Agua fresca.
Agua fresca.
So jealous. Nice. What flavor did you get?
I was going cantaloupe.
You like the cantaloupe? Yep.
So when Mary Jo was out gallivanting around the courtroom or whatever she was doing, I used this as a cocktail because my wife has made a cocktail version of this.
Yes.
Which tastes exactly like this. I hope there is vodka.
I hope so.
But I don't think there is. Anyway, this has arrived. So you buy these on the street, and they cost nothing.
I'm so jealous. I know. And one of our chatters in the Discord, you saw it, Mary Jo, posted a sandwich he's having. I said, that looks as good as my $30 sandwich. He said, yeah, it was 55 pesos. It was like $2.50. Yeah, so this is a $35.
Yeah. Well,
it's a whole steak, Mary Jo.
That's what happens when you live in California, Leo.
You don't want this. Trust me, Mary Jo.
Tri-tip? Is that tri-tip?
Actually, it's a ribeye, they say.
A ribeye.
But it's a little bit. That's a little
greasy. Looks pretty good.
Yeah. If I were with you, Paul, we'd be going out and having tacos. Trust me.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm so jealous. Yeah. So jealous.
It's not bad.
Bring an Xbox to Mexico with you?
No. I didn't think I was going to be here this long.
Yeah, you kind of moved in down there. This is good.
Yeah. I mean, if we didn't have cats, we could just stay here, I guess, or a dog. I don't know.
Is anybody taking care of the animals?
Oh, crap. No, yes. We have... Yeah, the dog is at a like a kennel type thing, and we have a niece who is coming over.
That's what keeps us from traveling all the time, is Lisa's cats.
Well, cats are easy. Dogs are a lot harder.
Yeah, Lisa wants a dog, but we keep saying no, and we can't.
No, we always said no because of this, and it's really expensive. This dog is like $100 a day. I mean,
well, kennels are not nice for dogs either.
Well, this one's actually is pretty nice.
Got a fancy.
She loves it. She goes running in to see the people.
I go to McKenzie's town for dogs.
Yeah. Loves it. But by the time she's been there for a while, you know, she's ready to come home too.
Yeah.
Well, what are you going to do? Are you going to go in tomorrow now? Or did United tell you when their flights?
No, we changed it to Saturday, and we didn't have flights, so we couldn't do Wednesday or Thursday. We have, you know, this, then I have a work thing tomorrow, and then we said, then there were no flights Friday.
Build is tomorrow, right?
No, build starts.
It's next week,
Monday or Tuesday.
Oh, okay. Tuesday next week.
Yeah. Okay,
yeah. I'm going to be back for that.
Got to be back for that. We know.
We had to do laundry. We don't have a laundry machine yet, so we had to go find
Right.
That cost. We did all our laundry for $3. It was funny. Anyway.
You don't need a washing machine.
Right. I know. That's what I said. I said, why are we spending $800 on a washing machine?
Yeah, really. What fun.
Yeah.
What fun. Let's talk Xbox.
Yeah. So this goes back. I don't remember how far back this goes. Some number of years ago, I think Brad might have been one of the first people to write about it. In the transition with Xbox and all consoles from disk-based to digital, there's this one big problem, which is that people have libraries of disks, and they want to own those things digitally. Like that, we want to be able to send them in or something and get a credit and, you know, some system. And Microsoft has been working on something for a long time for this need. It's a real need. And I don't have any discs anymore, but during the Xbox 360 era, that was when I made that transition. And I had a bunch of things on disc that I just wanted digitally. It's so archaic to have to stick a disc in a drive just to spin the thing up and get it going. So Xbox, for me personally, I've been all digital Xbox One and Xbox Series X and S. But that's not true of a lot of people. So Microsoft has been working for some system, some solution for people who have libraries of disk-based games to get those games digitally. And I think it was Gamer.
You and Mark would go to Best Buy at midnight to get the latest Call of Duty. I mean, there's a certain.
It was cool. Yeah, it was fun. I'd wake him up. He was like 10 or 12 years old or whatever.
So cute.
I'd wake him up at midnight every year, and we'd drive over to Best Buy. Yeah, it was fun. And I remember, I don't remember which year it was, but I do remember the first year we didn't do that. And I still woke him up and we downloaded the game. And, it was still fun. And I think he still appreciated it, but it's not the same, as
not there, but not at all. Yeah.
Yeah. What I only play Call of Duty, basically. So what I've done over the years is, as those older Call of Duty games became less expensive digitally, I would buy them on sale or whatever. So I actually have everything I want now digitally, but that's, more. Other people obviously do different things. So there's a site or a blog or whatever called Gamerant that found a Microsoft patent that basically describes this system, what they're trying to do. So I'll just read this. This is their description. And it says, the owners simply appreciate the feel. Oh, that's software ownership validation of optical discs using a secondary device is the name of this patent. And the idea is they have some system where you can plug it in. It reads the unique code that is on every disk, because every one of those is in fact unique, and it will facilitate the access, the switch of physical media to a digital license, essentially. And this is actually kind of a big deal for some of the newer consoles. I don't know Xbox One, but Xbox, wasn't there a diskless version of at least one previous generation system, and Xbox Series S, of course, is diskless. And so there's an issue right there. So they are working on it. It's on the way, hopefully. it used to be called Disk to Digital. That was the original name. Yeah, I'm sorry, Xbox One S, all digital console, but 3 years ago. So this has been a need for a while. I think it's finally going to happen. At least this suggested it. So we are working toward that future. And let's see, it is the middle of May, and I know that because for some reason I'm still in Mexico. And that means we have more Xbox Game Pass titles. They usually release a bunch, or at least announce a bunch, I should say, at the beginning of the month, and then again around the 15th. So they've done that. You know, increasingly, I look at these lists, and I'm like, I don't know. You know, but this year, this half month, this period, there are two big ones for me. Jurassic World Evolution 2 is kind of a big one. And then Sniper Elite 5, first-person shooter. That's kind of interesting. There's also Farming Simulator 22. I don't know who plays these games. But anyway, there's 6, 12-ish games coming out between the 15th and the end of the month. So, as always, take advantage of your subscription. Bethesda, which is now part of Xbox, right, has delayed two of their major titles, Starfield and Redfall, leading to a case of what I now will call Halo Infinitus, which is you've told the world that something's going to arrive, and now it's going to arrive a year later, or at least some time later. So both of these games were originally supposed to arrive this November, and them not arriving in November is obviously going to cause a problem for the holiday selling season because these were eagerly anticipated, but they will both now ship sometime next year, so... We'll see. Hopefully they'll get Warthogs and other Halo-type things to make up for it. I have no idea. And then this is just kind of interesting because Sony is transitioning their PlayStation subscriptions over to be something more like Xbox Game Pass, right? So some time ago, I think last month, they announced three tiers of what they're going to still call PlayStation Plus. There's PlayStation Plus Essential, Extra, it's a terrible name, and Premium. And so these things vary between $9.99 per month and $17.99 per month, and they all have different perks and whatnot. But the big question is, like, what are the games, you know, that are going to be released via the service, this new version of the service, which is coming out later this year? And so they announced that list. It's a big list of both first and third-party partners. I mean, it's... You know, the Uncharted games are in there. I mean, I'm not as big on the Sony side of things, but you see some of the classics like Assassin's Creed Valhalla, third-party title, Batman Arkham Knight, Far Cry 3 and 4, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So it looks like there's a lot of stuff. You know, I expect this thing to be competitive. I don't think that Sony's subscriptions were all that competitive in the past, and they weren't exactly the same as Xbox Game Pass. And it looks like they're kind of lining them up more like that now, with the most expensive version having game streaming and all that kind of stuff. So if you're on the Sony side and you've been feeling jealous about Xbox, which I completely understand because Sony is terrible, it'll be getting better. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Sony's good, too.
Yeah, you know.
If you could buy one, they'd be great.
Well, you can. That's the thing. You can get a PS5 more readily, I think, than an Xbox.
Oh, you can.
Series
okay.
X,
okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
We got both now. I'm really happy, although I made myself... Yeah. I nauseated myself playing No Man's Sky.
Yeah.
And I had to go lie down.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm like, okay, I'm not
now,
playing.
Is that because you're spinning in space or flying upside down?
Yeah, like, I was running around. The radiation was getting through my suit. I couldn't get enough iron to fix the thing, and I was just...
I mean, you know it doesn't actually affect you physically, right?
No. It's inner ear. It's the whole thing. But I had that happen with Halo, with the Master Chief Collection. Some
wow,
games,
really?
For some reason, do it. And so, you know, I played hundreds of hours of Valheim without that.
Oh, my God. My life would be over if that ever happened to me.
I think it's... Yeah, maybe it's... Is it the first-person thing? I don't know. I don't know what
There's
it is.
There's definitely a... I tried a... When VR was still kind of a new thing, this is a decade ago or whatever, I tried an Unreal Engine... kind of first-person shooter. It wasn't really a game. It was just like a demo. And I almost vomited before I could get the headset off. Like, it was horrific.
There's something in the way they design games. Some games do it to me and some don't. I'm not sure.
Oh, that's interesting.
I'm not sure what it is, but...
yeah.
Anyway.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah, it wasn't fun. Fortunately, I went and had a delicious cup of Trade coffee, and I felt so much better afterwards. Find a coffee you will love with Trade coffee. I just got some in the mail, but I want to show you real quickly. This is our sponsor, by the way. The quiz, because you're going to want to do this. You know, starts with how do you make coffee at home? We use an AeroPress.
What's your experience coffee level? I think I'm a total coffee nerd. Now, do you add anything to your coffee? Now, if I were a total coffee nerd, would I add milk or cream, flavored creamer or spices? No, I'd take it black like a real coffee nerd. Medium, light, dark roast? Yeah. How do you like your coffee to taste? Classic and traditional? Hint of something different? I defer to you. I defer to you. And then I like to get whole bean because I grind it myself. So you take the quiz, and they're going to start sending you. This is kind of the craft beer of coffee. They're going to start sending you coffee, and they partner with, it comes to you directly from the best craft roasters in the country. So let me see. This one is from something Wisconsin, Viroqua. Is that a town in Wisconsin? Viroqua, Wisconsin. So again, this is probably something I would never have in the normal course of event. Oh, and I love it, by the way, because you can really smell that coffee. Oh, smells so good. Just roasted, just for me. Mmm, this is the Big Dipper, organic, rich, and fudgy. Oh, boy. Tasting notes, fudge, brown butter, and vanilla wafer. Man, I love coffee. How life without coffee would just not be living. So this is cool. It's fair trade, paying farmers more, 100% solar powered. This is really cool. Like the small Midwestern town we call home, we know you don't have to be big to make an impression. That little bug on our bag is a cicada. There it is. Their big ominous hum sparks a sense of mystery in us. Wow. Wonder State Coffee. Should we open it up? Try a little bit of it? All the bags have good, excellent sealing, but they're always fresh. Let's just take a look at this delicious medium roast coffee. These are all independent businesses, big cities, small towns, like this one from Wonder State Coffee. Trade customers make a difference for these independent roasters. They're often the biggest source of new growth for them. So you're helping these little guys do some really interesting, innovative things. Trade Coffee is going to send you freshly roasted beans. They're up to now 60 different best craft roasters in the country. And we've had a lot of bags of Trade Coffee, and it's been different every time. It's really fun. It's really fun. You don't have to be a coffee snob to be a trade lover. But if you know, and you know when coffee is just right, you're going to be very happy. Trade's coffee experts personally taste test 450 roasts. That way they know exactly what to recommend for you based on the quiz. That's true because everybody's got different interests, different tastes. Lisa and I just have so much fun. We'll make a different, what are we having today, honey? She said, well, we're going to do the Wonderstone. Let's try it, the Wonder State Big Dipper, rich and fudgy. Trade is always fresh, always delicious, and it's always a coffee exploration. They've delivered over 5 million bags of fresh coffee, 750,000 positive reviews. And right now, if you're a new subscriber, you can get $30 off your first order and free shipping. Go to drinktrade.com/windows. Take that quiz. You'll get more than 40 cups of coffee for free. So start with the quiz, drinktrade.com/windows. Let them find a coffee you will love. I'm going to go right out there and grind this myself and have some right now. drinktrade.com/windows. If you love coffee, $30 off your first order plus free shipping. Discover the amazing variety of craft roasted, fresh roasted beans. You can get it ground. We always like to get it beans because we grind it ourselves, but you can also get it ground from Trade. drinktrade.com/windows. I thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. I almost want to just eat this out of the bag. This looks so. Oh, look, Paul's sucking away at his agua fresca. That's good.
Delicious. That's some good fresca.
I want some cantaloupe agua fresca. I'm so jealous. That sounds so good right now. Oh. It's 85 degrees in Petaluma. We need it. But wow. Instead, I'm going to make a little trade. That's what I'll do. Let's start the back of the book with our tip of the week, Mr. Paul Thurrott.
So I was just told this has been around for several years, but I I think it's magic, and I love it, and I wanted to share it with other people, which is most people are probably familiar with Street View and Google Maps, where you drag the little yellow guy down one of the streets, and you look around, and I believe if you go to Dedham and find the right neighborhood, there's still a picture of me walking down the street.
Oh, that's fun.
In a certain number, yeah. I happen to be there when the Google car drove by. But what's interesting about that, of course, is that Google goes out and redoes these images from time to time. And so there's now a history of images. And one of the things you can do with Street View on the web, on your PC or Mac or whatever, is you can actually bring up a scene, bring up a Street View, and then go back in time and look at it over time. And so I decided to do this because I'm tedious. I'll just keep talking about Mexico. With the apartment here, I did a Street View of the apartment.
Neat. How far back did you go?
In this case, to 2008.
That's neat.
So, you should look at the pictures. It's really cool. So, in 2008, this neighborhood was all 2 to 3 story buildings. That's all that was here. And obviously, sometime in the interim, Mexico decided you could go up to 6 stories. So, as you go forward in time, what you can see is like developers. Well, in this case, the developer bought this little building, which was a 2-story building with shops on the ground floor and an apartment above. Bought it, raised it, dug a hole in the ground, and put up a 6-story high-rise with a 2-floor garage.
Oh, that's hysterical.
And yeah, it's incredible.
So are you in one of the original floors, I wonder?
No, because we're in the 6th floor. So,
oh, okay. Yeah. Well, you'd think it'd be the top 2 floors. It's so much more important. Oh,
yeah. So what's interesting is up and down the street, like even on the left, it's kind of hard to see, but that building across the street from us, the green one, has gone up a couple of floors. The building beyond it has gone up as the same height as ours. But if you look at that first picture, they're all basically 2 or 3 stories.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
And you know, Mexico, a lot of the zoning is so different from where I live. And I always appreciate. I'd like to see this kind of thing where you have shops in the bottom and then you have apartments above.
Right.
Right.
Love that.
So we don't have any shops, but I don't think they're really doing that with the new stuff. But up and down the street, there's a lot of this going on. And so, and in fact, when we went to breakfast this morning, actually, that last picture, you can see the tower in the back there on the left. Is another 6-story building, yeah, and right across from us, and that wasn't there in 2008 either. So you know, this neighborhood is changing. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And all that empty sky you see around us on the other side, that could be
gone.
Very, very different in a few years. Yeah,
you are in one of the nicest neighborhoods though in Mexico. You're in Roma Norte.
It's nice. I think so. Yeah, it's
really,
a nice place.
Really nice. That's cool. We had at one point. And I think it's lost forever. At the Brick House, we had a guy come in and do 360s of the whole thing.
Yes.
And
yes,
you could do a 360 inside. Walkthrough. But I don't think it's there anymore.
Because the office is probably different now.
Yeah. Too bad. Yeah. I wish
so
I'd
they do that, obviously,
it.
For malls and for airports. And, you know, that's so cool. The inside stuff is really cool, too.
Oh, yeah. It was really a neat thing to be able to walk around inside. But, yeah, I think they probably, as soon as your business leaves that area...
Yeah.
That's that. Oh, well. But I still have the street view. I bet I can go back in time in the street view.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. Like the house we used to live in Dedham, it only goes back to 2012 for some reason. I didn't look at the house we live in now. I bet that goes back even less time. But, you know, depending on the area, like you could pick a famous, well, you want to pick a place that's changed, I guess. And I think this street we're on here is a great example of it because this place is changing dramatically. You know, the place I live now doesn't change. Yeah, I remember.
How do you go back in time, though?
Up left, there's a little clock thing. No, right, there you go. Click on that to bring it down, and it'll give you the dates. And then click on the picture to show the old picture.
Oh.
Like you can, click on it to bring it full screen.
This is before we moved in, or no, this is after we left. It only goes back to 2011. Yeah. Oh, no, this is us. We're doing the construction. That's right.
Yeah, so people, if you don't know about this, I mean, you might want to go look at your house or, you know, something. But, you could see it, you know, but the old house we lived in, the people painted it. And it looks terrible, frankly. And you can go back and see how it looked when it was nice, and then it's terrible
cool.
now.
And,
I didn't know about this.
That is a nice feature.
Yeah.
The good old days. All right. Pick of the week.
I know that has nothing to do with Windows, but I just thought it was kind of interesting.
No, I love that. Thank you for sharing that. I can look at the old Brick House.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of people will be surprised by this. And then there'll be people like, dude, this has been around for 10 years. Okay, so I've been thinking a lot about alternative browsers, like I always do, but just because there are two news stories that, you know, don't actually impact Windows users all that much, but it reminds me that, you know, Vivaldi and Brave are the two I'm kind of thinking about. So Vivaldi just did their second deal with an automaker to put their browser into a new car, or new cars, I think there's different models, in this case from Renault. You have to be parked. You know, you're not going to be driving around. But the idea here is, you know, maybe you're a traveling salesman and you have conference calls. You can do it from the gorgeous huge screen that's in your car instead of bringing out your phone or a laptop or whatever. It does all the sync stuff with your, if you use it on desktop or mobile. That's kind of neat. I think that's kind of cool. And then Brave has a feature that's available on the desktop called Privacy Hub. And now they're making it available on iOS. And I think it actually might be on Android already as well. And this is basically a thing that will give you an update about how many trackers they're blocking. You know, the idea behind Brave is that this thing is private by default. You don't have to add extensions and all that. And so they're building all these security and privacy features into all of the versions of their browsers. And now they're doing it on iOS. So if you're a Brave user and you were missing out on this on iOS, I think this was on Android already. It's definitely on desktop. You can access it everywhere, basically. So that's cool. That's cool.
So I'm looking at our house, but...
Yep, so you can't stop doing it. Can't stop.
In a way, because we live on a cul-de-sac, I didn't expect any street view, but they've in fact been there four times in the last 3 years. So I guess they map everything.
Yep. It really varies depending on the place for some reason. Yeah. And then there are places like... I looked at Paris because I love Paris, but the truth is they've been all over Paris for thousands and thousands of times, but it doesn't change that much.
Yeah.
You know, depending on...
100 years from now, it'll be really great, though.
Yes, exactly.
200 years.
Just wait.
Just wait.
It's going to be awesome.
Just wait. Mary Jo Foley, would you like to give us an enterprise pick of the week?
I would. I didn't know about this until somebody told me on Twitter, but Microsoft's Product Evaluation Center, where you can download things for a set period of time to evaluate it, mostly used by businesses... is broken, and it's been broken since at least May 11th. So people have been trying to get things like Windows Client 90-day evaluation, Windows Server 180-day evaluation, hardware kits, Configuration Manager, I heard SQL Server, all these things that people routinely download to evaluate. You haven't been able to get them because the evaluation center is broken and there's no ETA on a fix. Luckily, there is a way you can still do this. If you go to techcommunity.microsoft.com, search for an article called Accessing Trials and Kits for Windows, Eval Center Workaround. The author, Heather Poulsen's, pulled together a bunch of download links so people can still continue to get these evaluation editions of these products. Because there's no ETA and no explanation about what's wrong with the eval center, I think this might be handy for people who do need to download these for work purposes to check things out before they decide if they're buying them or not buying them. So yeah, at least there is a workaround, and I don't have any more details for you about what happened or why this happened.
Is this everything or just a sample subset of the whole?
It's, I don't know. There's people in the comments saying, oh yeah, SQL Server is broken too. And
wow.
I'm like, oh, like a whole bunch of products you can't download at the moment from the eval center. I don't know if the entire eval center is down or what is happening, but at least there are some links through this blog post.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
You have some code names.
I do, and they're Linux related, Leo.
Oh, how exciting.
Wow.
Yep. So
I thought I knew you.
She hates Apple and she loves Linux.
This is a pretty weird story. This is a pretty weird story. I'm going to give you the whole how I found this story, how I found out about this, because it's very weird. So when I was looking through the build session list, one of the sessions had the word Microsoft Linux distros in plural in the description. And I'm like, wait. Isn't there just one CBL Mariner, Common Base Linux Mariner, that Microsoft created a couple of years back and uses internally whenever they need a Linux kernel to develop a product? So I'm like, wait, why is this in plural? So I started doing a lot of searches, and I found a blog post from a guy, let me get his name, because he did all the heavy lifting on this. Hayden Barnes, who works at SUSE. He somehow found out there's another Microsoft Linux distro that's called CBL Delridge. So CBLD. So now there's the CBLM, which is CBL Mariner, the one we already knew about. And there's this other one, CBLD. CBLD is something Microsoft built in 2020. It's based on Debian. It's a custom Debian distribution that Microsoft built to use for their own Azure services internally. Right now, Azure Cloud Shell is supposedly, I think, the only thing I see listed as using this. Hayden went through all this back. He like figured out how to build this, and then he went and found all the links to it in GitHub. And then he even researched the code names. So Delridge is the actual name of a district in West Seattle. So that's where the Delridge name came from. And inside Delridge is version 10, which was codenamed Quinault. Quinault is in the Olympic National Park in Washington State. It's a valley. So, yeah, there's all these weird things. I'm like, wow, there's a whole other Microsoft Linux distro that no one, as far as I know, has ever talked about, written about.
Wonder what
and
it's for.
Here it is. It's for the Azure Cloud Shell, but my question is, what else is it for?
Right.
Right?
That's really interesting.
Yeah, Hayden Barnes, kudos to you, man. You were like the detective. I don't even know how you found this stuff, but it's amazing.
Well, and I don't know how Scooter X found this stuff, our chat mod, but he found the walkthrough. So I wish I could download this somehow, but this is the walkthrough.
Yeah.
There's all
That's
the bricks.
Fun.
Yeah. Yep. This is the walkthrough.
We've been there.
You remember this, right?
Yep.
You can literally go right in.
Yep.
And so we
can't believe the effort that must have gone into dismantling this and just
taking it all lock, stock, and barrel. And I told you, I had to blur out people's faces, which is, I think that's me sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
But I told you that the place now is in federal receivership.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. Wow. The people who bought it, it was a Ponzi scheme.
Well, at least they made you leave. You know?
She's in she's in prison for defrauding, for $300 million in fraud. And the federal government now owns that whole building.
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of annoying. She wanted to triple the rent. Now I understand what the whole... we couldn't figure out why they were buying this for much more than market value.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now we know.
Yep.
Yeah, it was a beautiful, beautiful old place.
Yeah, it was nice.
Yeah. I was very fond of the Stargate that we had built, right?
It was cool.
Goes all the way into the back. Can I get back there?
Did you guys take all the bricks with you, or how did you do
it? We took a number of them, but they... let's go back around, and I'll show you.
Go the back. That's funny.
I can go... Yeah, there's the kitchen. This is the wall that we had famous people sign.
I signed it.
You signed it? Look at that.
I did.
The bricks, when we... we'd use the money to build this thing, and we put the bricks up on the wall here like this. But when they put the bricks up... Whoop, hello. Oh, there we go. When we put the bricks up, they use regular mortar to mortar them to drywall. So we get them down in big chunks with big chunks of drywall attached. So this is the only record that has everything. We have a few we were able to strip the drywall off of, but a lot of these are lost. Yeah, sorry to say. They broke and stuff when we were trying to clean them.
Yep.
So,
the Half-Life symbol there.
Yeah, isn't that cool? Yeah. So I appreciate everybody who bought a brick. And, of course, this studio exists pretty much exactly as the old studio did because we were able to take it and move it over here. Much to the surprise of the new owners who thought we would be there forever.
Right.
The old owners said, oh, they'll never move. They spent $1.5 million building that studio. Yeah, they'll never go anywhere. Well, it turns out a studio is actually pretty detachable. It all came on down except the bricks. How about a beer pick of the week, Mary Jo Foley?
Okay. This is a fun one. it's from Talia, which is the only women-owned brewery in New York. The beer is called Haba Haba Splash.
Is there habanero in it? Oh, there is!
Yep,
holy,
there is.
Holy moly.
Yep. This is a fruited sour beer. It's brewed with habanero, tamarind, mango, and pink sea salt. So kind of a weird mix.
it's like a lightly,
I don't think it's too spicy, but somewhat spicy mango type flavor of a beer. Only 4.2%. So a nice light summery type beer. Talia makes a lot of fun sours. They do a lot of kind of crazy fun flavors. And here's a tip. If you're visiting New York this summer, if you're coming to the big city, there's a new Talia pop-up attached to Grand Central. So you can actually go out and sit outside in a covered area right next to Grand Central and drink their delicious beers right there in a big beer garden. I don't know how long it's going to be there, at least till fall, I think. But if you're taking a train out of Grand Central and you want to buy some beer to go, or if you want to just meet somebody there before or after a train, you can go hang out at the Talia pop-up at Grand Central and drink a Habba Habba Splash.
Habba Habba Habba.
That actually sounds good. I'm glad to hear it's not spicy hot, though.
Yeah, not too. It's like kind of hot on the back end. Like you drink it. And then,
yeah.
I've had a few beers with habanero. Ooh. It's like at the end, you're like, ooh, it is a little spicy, but not too crazy.
A little bit of spicy.
Yeah.
There's our beer. That means when you hear the beer, you know it's time to say farewell to our fabulous duo, our dynamic duo of windows, Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. You'll find Mary Jo Foley at her ZDNet blog, allaboutmicrosoft.com. You'll find Paul, man about town in Mexico City, and
who knows?
And, of course, at Thurrott.com. Yeah, his books are at leanpub.com, including the Field Guide to Windows 10. And, of course, they come together every Tuesday. Now, next week is Build.
Wednesday.
It is.
Next week is Build. Yeah. The keynotes are Tuesday, but you're going to come by on Wednesday, explain it all to us. Yes?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
Yes.
So tune in Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC, if you want to watch it live. Live.twit.tv, after the fact on demand. At twit.tv/ww. There's a YouTube channel devoted to Windows Weekly, and of course you can get it from your favorite podcast client and subscribe there. You'll get it every time it's done automatically, so you can listen at your leisure. Paul, Mary Jo, thank you so much. Paul, I wish you the best.
If I'm here next week, something has gone horribly wrong.
Or something's gone horribly right. It's also possible.
Yeah.
I want that big cantaloupe agua fresca. Oh, my God. That sounds
so good.
All right, you two. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful week, and we will see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.
Did you spend a lot of money on your brand-new smartphone, and then you look at the pictures on Facebook and Instagram, and you're like, what in the world happened to that photo? Yes, you have. I know. It happens to all of us. Well, you need to check out my show, Hands-On Photography, where I'm going to walk you through simple tips and tricks that are going to help make you get the most out of your smartphone camera or your DSLR or mirrorless, whatever you have. And those shots are going to look so much better, I promise you. So make sure you're tuning in to twit.tv/hop for Hands-On Photography to find out more.